Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Teacher Tales. I am excited today to have a special guest from Georgia, and I'm going to let her introduce herself and tell you a little about what she does as a teacher.
Well, hello everyone. My name is Ebony Thornton. I am a Spanish teacher in the greater Atlanta area, just outside of Atlanta, in a very large school system in Metro Atlanta. So I'm excited to be here with everyone.
Well, we're excited to hear a story from a teacher in a large school district like Atlanta. We have, school districts all over the country. They're in small areas, rural areas, big cities, and we want to get, a big, broad perspective on all of it. So, Ebony, tell us a little bit about why you became a teacher.
Well, I had a wonderful Spanish teacher, and I just loved her so much. And from having her, I decided that it was what I wanted to do. I thought at first I may have wanted to teach language arts because I liked writing and I liked poetry and things like that. But when I had my actual Spanish one teacher in 1996, I just said, this is what I want to do, especially because I had her my senior, my junior, and my senior year. So she laid the groundwork for me to do what I'm doing now.
Don't you think that most teachers become teachers because there's been a teacher that influenced them and got them to love the subject matter? And you said that you had her for 2 years, so that's time to establish, a good relationship with the teacher and a very meaningful one. And those connections are, they spark little, fires that prompt, us to go on to follow that same path because we've
I
been
agree
inspired.
100%. I think it goes one of two ways. You either have the teach, I think when we get into this profession, there was someone that made an impact on our lives, but the further we get into our degree study, you often also think of the teacher you had where they maybe didn't make you feel really good, and you said you probably on the other side of that, particularly for teachers of color, marginalized teachers who teach in marginalized communities, Muslim teachers, Latino teachers, LGBTQ teachers, you never want to have a student feel the way that that teacher made you feel. So you go into the classroom as a way to kind of buffer and stop what happened to you from happening to another child. It's either I want to give them, or you want to give them what you maybe wanted or could have needed but didn't get. I have a friend who she teaches language arts because she never got, she wanted to be the language arts teacher as a young Black girl that she never got. Her name's Shania Bond. So that is someone I kind of have that same vein myself. Because I loved speaking Spanish, but it wasn't until I think I got into college that I even learned about the concept of an Afro-Latino. So I didn't, and I never saw someone that looked like me in the textbook. So I liked it and I liked the language, but it wasn't until I got older. Well, no, I take that back. The following year, we had a teacher, she was Panamanian, come to our school. And I thought to myself, she looks like me. And she speaks Spanish too, and she could be a Spanish teacher. Wait, her family. So I had a certain image in my mind of what a Spanish speaker I thought looked like and sounded like. So it was nice to be able to have that challenged in a good way, really, and then build my career on that.
I mean, that is really important, a very important point, and I agree with it, wholeheartedly. Years ago, it's been more than 10 years now, I did a Fulbright Hayes grant with a group of teachers from Florida, and the purpose of it was to go to South America and to highlight the indigenous part of the Spanish, in quotes, culture down there, and also the Afro-Latino culture, like you said, that Spanish wasn't just about, white conquistadors that came over. There was a lot more dimension to it. And I don't know, I think teachers to be really successful and to have an impact on students, they have to see all of their students, all of them, whatever gender, color, race, religious beliefs, or anything like that. So, and that I know I became a Spanish teacher because I, wanted to broaden my horizons, and also I wanted to be someone that could see kids because I didn't feel seen. Even though I'm white, I still didn't feel seen, and I didn't feel heard, maybe at home with my family. And so those are just basic human needs that teachers can fulfill, for children. And that's an important role to play, and a part to play in a kid's life. And so that one teacher that influenced you, that's a big impact. That's the power that teaching has. So what do you find challenging in teaching?
I think, gosh, I've done it so many years that I kind of have to compartmentalize everything before the 2021 school year and after that. So, challenges are always, the usual things, divide, students on their social media and things like that. I have a lot of support in my school and my school system where not a lot of school systems do. So I'm fortunate that I have, excuse me, I have the ability to kind of teach with some flexibility, even within my curriculum parameters, as long as I cover our standards and our what will, the students will be assessed on, I have a lot of flexibility on that. I feel like where the challenges are is that so much of the needs of society is being placed on the shoulders of teachers that it is very much feeling unsustainable. We're pretty much now, when you think about it, I teach high school. So the only real kind of third communal space that teenagers can go to that's kind of inexpensive, there's less and less malls, there's less and less movie theaters. And so, one of the few places, if not the only place, a lot of them can just come to hang out with their friends is school. And while that social component is part of it, it's not all of it. They are there to get an education. And I think we don't take into account what their lives are like outside of school and their passions outside of school. So, I feel like that's one challenge. I feel that the erosion of trust between school board, local school, community is another factor because I think trust is very important when you're building a community. And
Absolutely.
if I don't trust, if my students don't trust me and they don't feel safe with me, they won't engage in my content. If I don't feel safe with my administrative team and I don't feel like they have my best interest at heart, will I trust the vision they're putting forth in the school? Will I help to contribute to it? Same thing with the school board. If I don't trust my school board will support what I do in the classroom, can we have a working relationship? No. So I think just a lot of that's probably the biggest obstacle is we all, I think, have a similar or a common goal in mind. But we don't trust each other to work together to get, and again, not the case in my school, but that seems to kind of be a common, that seems to be the thing. Administ, you know, teachers don't feel supported by administ, those things.
I saw a social media post recently that was like, we're not looking for a perfect teacher. We're looking for a teacher who really cares and wants to make a difference in the life of a child. And I know all the teachers I've been talking to, that's why they go into teaching. They really care about children, or they just had this calling. They want to make a difference in the life of a child. And I think that what you're describing about the trust is a burden, and it's created from the way education has changed, where it's kind of like they're looking for a perfect teacher. They're trying to drill the data down, or the evidence and the evaluations down, to a perfect teacher that gets, the highest scores in every box on the evaluation, and they're nitpicking at little things. And I see a lot of administrators go in, and it's really kind of a gotcha thing. They're looking to point out everything that you are not doing correctly, or they want you to correct in order to be perfect.
I
And
agree.
that creates a lot of mistrust, because you're like, well, geez, I can't do anything right, it seems like. And that trickles down to the kids too, because when you're looking at, I was in a high performing school, my last school that I was in, and they drilled, I mean, the kids did so well. We didn't have very many in the lower 25 percentile, but we had to take the data and drill it down to just a ridiculous point where everybody was like, then became competitive, and colleagues didn't trust each other, and admin was micromanaging. Yeah, the trust.
Because you don't want to be the person and you don't want to create the environment where, you're doing something good and you don't want to share it, especially if there's some compensation involved with it, you want to kind of keep your secret to yourself so you look a little bit better than everyone else. And if there's the last place, to me, there should be any competition is in the classroom, because we're all on the same page. We all have the same common goal, and that is educating kids. So if you do something better, or your students are able to master a skill, and maybe it's not something I can get across the mind, I'm gonna say, hey, why don't you go next door and go see Senora so and so? She's got a really cool little activity that her students really like. So give that a shot. I never want to be the only source of information my students go to. So in that perfect, they always say perfection is the enemy of good. And we see that a lot in this job. Yes, you want a teacher that knows their content. Yes, you want them to teach it well, but they do not have to be perfect to do that.
Yeah, I worked with a teacher once that she actually, when I was a district supervisor, and there was a lot of pressure for me to go in and kind of force her to change, but she, because she wasn't doing what the administration thought she should be doing. But man, her kids loved her, and they loved the subject. And yeah, they did have a lot of food fiestas. Yeah, they did make a lot of piñatas. But she turned the kids on to learning Spanish. She also taught French, and they made crepes and stuff like that. And I
And
understand.
those are the things, believe it or not, that they're going to remember. We did an activity this year. I got prior approval for it, but for Dia de los Muertos, I found sugar cookies. And we decorated them like little sugar skulls. And I remember my students saying this was so much fun. Sometimes we're so focused on the test, the score, the grade, the data that we forget, and especially with a concept like language learning, it's about the journey and it's about them being able to communicate. And those, the piñatas, the cascarones, I miss doing some of those things. And we don't have time to do them anymore because I'm so focused. Even though my content area is not a high stakes testing, I don't have, I don't have a state mandated test. I have a county final that we give, but I don't have a, for anybody who's listening, I'm in Georgia, so it's called the EOC. I don't have some big state assessment that determines whether or not a kid passes or fails. There's no high stakes testing in my area, in my content area. But I do have an assessment that I have to give. So I don't get to do the things that are more engaging and more fun because I've got content I got to cover for this test at the end of the year. When to me, what's authentic is those authentic interactions with the cultures, like the hot chocolate making, like the piñatas, like the decorating sugar skulls for Dia de Muertos, like breaking cascarones on our heads for Easter, like looking at a girl's pictures from her quinceañera and showing and us showing her waltz video. That's the real interaction with the language.
And
Them
don't you think,
answering a question on a multiple choice, yeah, that's great, but what's going to mean more later down the road?
But also, don't you think that those sorts of activities really speak to what you were saying earlier about school being, one of the very few places that kids can socialize? And where, when you're doing those sorts of activities, you have them working in groups or pairs or whatever. Even if it's not making food, maybe it's just, watching a video and talking about it in the target language,
You're
because
building a
all,
community.
yeah, you're building a community, and the culture, the products, practices, and perspectives, that's the foundation of a culture and a community. And that's what you're building in the classroom with the kids, and you're having them compare it to other ones, and they're making human connections. It's critical to be able to do those sort of things to allow the kids to explore themselves and, other people in the world, in a safe and open, way, instead of judging it and, looking for, like, what is different that they don't like, And a language teacher has that opportunity, I really think, more
Yep.
than any other teachers to do that and to
We
help.
do.
Yeah, we really do. So, some teachers are like, I don't let the kids work in pairs because there's too much chaos or all this. And it's like, well, I had learning centers, and kids would do learning centers like in elementary school. This was high school kids, and they loved it. And they talk to each other. And as a language teacher, we might have a ninth grader in with a 12th grader, and they're like, I would never have talked to a 12th grader as a ninth grader, but in your class, I had an opportunity to. And they're like, oh, the 12th grader says, that ninth grader's not so bad, Yeah, they learn different things. They learn about themselves and the people around them. And I think that's just such an issue now. Like you said, kids isolating, they live in their video games, and how they interact is through video games. And it's, yeah, so, but as far as, what kind of advice would you give to a new teacher then coming in to try to kind of ground themselves into education and not feel like they're, floating above everything and just trying, like, it's like a little surreal these days coming into education. It's
It
like,
is. It
it
is.
really is.
So, probably five things. One, find a good mentor. Find your find it find a teacher mom. Find a teacher mom or a teacher dad. Find a teacher parent. That mentor, that adult. I say mom because this is a primarily female-oriented profession, but if you can get a teacher dad, that works too. But find a veteran teacher that you can go to. Your school, if you're brand new to the profession, your school is usually assigning you one. But find a new veteran teacher in your building and have them be your person that you go to for questions. Whether it's how do I start a Google Classroom or how do I do this? Just that's your sounding board. They're your person to go to. That would be my first one. Second one. And this one's just kind of an odd one sometimes, or it's just not an odd one, but it's just one I think about. It's okay if it's okay to cry. If you gotta cry at lunch and you gotta cry when the bell rings, that's okay. If you make it to lunch and you make it to the bell to cry, that's okay. It is not the end of the world. Sometimes even I've been doing this 22 years and not as much as I used to, but every now and again, I still have a day where I'm just so frustrated I have tears in my eyes. That'll be my first one. Leave work at work. And then the big one, do not make your entire identity, do not center everything about you into this job. It's a great job. I love it. But it is just it is a job. It is wonderful work that we do. But should the unthinkable take place before your family posts your obituary, your school system will post the vacancy for your job. And that's just a fact. So make sure you have healthy outlets to, when you're stressed out, separate who you are as a teacher versus who you are outside of the classroom, and don't let them merge. I think having that, those are the things to me that kind of present burnout, because when I go home on Fridays or on a break, I do not, this school stays in the parking lot until I drive back to work that following Monday or that following next day. And that has been something I've adapted later as a teacher, because I did have a problem with the work-life balance, and I felt overwhelmed and I felt stressed out because I felt like I had to do everything and be everything for everybody all the time. No, you don't have to do that. It's okay to say no to things. It's okay to decline things. It's okay to say, no, I don't think I feel comfortable doing that. The world won't stop spinning on its axis because you don't decide to be a club sponsor.
Exactly. Or you don't agree to coach tennis,
Yeah,
in the 100 degree weather.
they will totally find another coach, and it is not worth, that supplement's not worth your peace and stress in your life.
Right. Yes. And ruminating on things, it's like just take a deep breath. Just keeps taking that next step forward. It's amazing how things will work out. What we think is a crisis or the end of the world, or it and chocolate.
And very few things in life that chocolate and Reese's peanut butter cups in the drawer won't fix. Always keep chocolate in the drawer.
Exactly. Also, talking to other teachers. I know sometimes, we come home and we bring it home and maybe our loved ones at home get tired of hearing about it. So, maybe having a PFF, sort of person that you can go to that will listen, or like you said, as a mentor, they may have, some insight that, you totally didn't think about or something. So, boundaries, having boundaries with work and having a balance. Boundaries with colleagues too, and parents, and because they can step over those boundaries very quickly and demand a lot more than the teacher is humanly possible and able to give. But I found that teachers have such a huge heart that it's very easy. Like you said early on, you're like, oh, I'm going to do all of this for everyone because that's why I took this job. I care so much, but it is you can very quickly and easily get sucked dry.
Yeah, and then there comes a point where you start feeling, because you feel taken advantage of, you feel like you're not being appreciated, then it goes somewhere kind of dark, and you don't want that to happen. And so when you're in a healthy headspace, when you're knowing when to put things down and when you have those boundaries in place is a whole lot easier.
Yes, absolutely. And you have to really keep reminding yourself, and sometimes even have that PFF who will remind you, like, really, really, do you really want to go there? You don't have to take everything on. I had a conversation earlier with a friend this morning on Zoom, and she was saying that she was talking about a teacher friend who so competent, so capable, but who would never say no, and then she would overcommit, but then she wasn't able to fulfill all of the commitments. So then she was dealing with guilt, and sometimes shame because she said she would do this one thing and she volunteered for it and somebody asked her and she didn't want to say no. She didn't set a boundary and she became overwhelmed and then she became, embarrassed and, then resentful or maybe got a little bit aggressive, defensive. That sort of thing. So we have to set those boundaries to be able to stay healthy mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually, And it's okay to set those boundaries. It's okay to say no. It's okay to not do it all. It's okay. And
It is.
I mean, permission slips. I mean, you know how you have permission slips in school to go on field trips and stuff. teachers, we did this as an activity one year, wrote some permission slips, and when we felt overwhelmed, it would be like, which permission slip am I going to pull out today? You know, a permission slip not to go down to the teacher's lounge today or teacher's room to you know, talk to other teachers, or
Right.
to
Sometimes you
permission
need that
slip to
clam
leave.
time.
Yep, permission slip to go to the bathroom first today because, you know, I've had my eighth bladder infection this year and I need to make that a priority, or just permission slips. We can get so caught up with, like I said, being that teacher for everyone, that we forget about ourselves. So teacher self-care and everything, very
Very
important.
much so.
Yeah. So what do you think is really the most, we've only got a couple more minutes here, but what do you
Okay.
think is really the most important thing in teaching that teachers need to keep in mind at all times?
That you're only one person,
Oh, that's so
that you
good.
are one person, and you will see your students 50 minutes a day for 170. I mean, this average school year is 190 days, but when you add in sick time and stuff like that, you got maybe 165 days with them. When if you were to run that time consecutively, it's about 2 weeks. You can make a lot of change in that 2 weeks, but guess what? If you don't make the progress that you think you should have made, it's okay. You made one step and put them on a journey, and sometimes they just needed that one step. You are a brick in a foundation, and you don't have to do everything all in the span of a school year.
Yep. That is very insightful and very profound. Yes.
Well,
Like you
thank you.
said, trying to be so many things to so many people, and you're just one person. Yep. So give yourself a permission slip just to be one person, not to be,
Agreed.
you know, 18 different personalities in one day.
Right.
Yeah.
'Cause I think that what's been happening right now is that everyone is expecting teachers to just be everything to everybody. They got to be teacher, they got to be social worker, they got to be parent, they got to be this, they got to be that, they got to be a counselor. I was like, no, I'm not a behavioral health specialist. I'm a Spanish teacher. I love being a Spanish teacher, but all that other stuff, that's above my pay grade. So it's okay to defer some of that stuff.
Don't you think
100%.
that that's what parents found out during the first week of the pandemic when they were trying to fill in all of those needs of their child?
Yes.
Teacher took care of all the time, and parents were like, no, this is too much. You know, I'm
Agreed.
overwhelmed.
Very
So,
much so.
yeah. So just have to one step at a time. Love the analogy of one brick in a foundation. It takes a village, lots of different things that we could say. And I just would hope that anyone listening to your story or any of the other teachers' stories would realize that teachers are human beings, and teachers, you know, need balance, and they need to have space, they need respect, they need to be treated like human beings, not like superheroes or, you know, superhumans that
Agreed.
can right all the wrongs of the world, or make everything perfect for everyone. That's just not our job.
It is not.
No. So, well, any other last words you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
It's okay to be okay. And when I say it's okay to be okay, what I mean is a lot of people say it's okay to not be okay. When I mean it's okay to be okay, do not feel like you have to embrace perfection. We sometimes, as teachers, we want to be Mercedes, we want to be the top of the line car, you know, and I don't want to sound like I'm being classist when I say this, but a fine, like a Ford Taurus, Corolla, an effective vehicle will get you where you need to go. It's okay if You are proficient. We want to be exemplary. We want to be the best of the best. We want to go above and beyond. Proficient's enough, and you're enough.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I think that's the Achilles heel of teachers is that they were very good students, or they may have
We just
not
have to
been,
try
and
hard.
then yep, and so we're all striving for A pluses, and that's it's okay to be average. It's okay to just be human. And there's nothing wrong with C. Yeah, I agree. Well, Ebonia has been wonderful talking to you. I appreciate you telling
Thank
your
you.
story. And
Thank you.
so everyone, I hope you enjoy this and share it with all the teachers you know, because there's a lot of wisdom here and a lot of inspiration. Okay, let
Thank
me.
you for having me. Have a good evening, everyone.
All right, let me stop the recording.